You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za. You're listening to the Drive Zone on Zone Radio, the voice of the Valley, and it is 13 minutes past four and time for this.
The IP Zone is brought to you by Spoor and Fisher, because every pioneer needs a partner.
At Spoor and Fisher, we understand the value of innovation and the sinister threats of your ideas being stolen.
Spoor and Fisher specializes in IP law. Our experienced team of specialists will do everything to protect what's yours.
When concept becomes reality, we're there to lock it down.
Create it. Own it.
Choose Spoor and Fisher to secure your intellectual property.
And one of those experts and specialists which that ad spoke about is sitting right here in the studio with me. His name is Jeremy Spears, and he is going to be speaking to us this afternoon on the IP Zone about something that is, I'm guessing, quite a new aspect when it comes, relatively new aspect when it comes to law. And getting not only one's individual head around it, but society's head around it is something I would imagine is quite challenging. Welcome, Jeremy. Nice to have you with us. And
thanks, Richard. Great to be here.
Now, you're going to be talking about AI and copyright. I'm just going to leave it to you to talk. I'll butt in if I think I've got a question that needs to be asked. But from my understanding, it's about ownership of what has been created.
Yeah, that's right. Like you said, it is a very new area of law. It's fine with me, though. It keeps us lawyers in business. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, primarily when we're dealing with AI, we're dealing with copyright. And so I think we should just touch on what we mean by copyright. So it's an intellectual property right that provides legal protection to the creators of works of the mind. And it protects different fixed categories of works, and these are all specified in legislation. Mm. So literary works, for instance, books, poems, etc., computer programs, sound recordings, etc. So they are fixed categories of works. And importantly, it's an automatic right. So it's a right that one is given by the law automatically as soon as you put your idea into material form. So as soon as you write your book or you paint your painting or you code your computer program. There's no registration system for copyright. If somebody asks you for your copyright registration certificate, then you should be very suspicious of them. So the basic requirement for copyright is that it must be original. So the work that you produce must be original to qualify for this automatic right. And we use the term original in a kind of very high level way. It's not a very high bar. So all it means is, it doesn't have to be novel, but what it means is it has to be the product of your own endeavors, right? So it can't be copied from somebody else. Mm. That's really all originality refers to there. It doesn't have to be particularly groundbreaking or novel.
So plagiarism would infringe on copyright?
Yeah, okay. Plagiarism would infringe, but we're still at the stage now where we're talking about how you get copyright, how copyright arises. So in order to get copyright, it needs to be original. But importantly, copyright doesn't protect the underlying idea. It's not like a different form of IP, what we called patents, where you can actually register an idea and protect an invention and stop anybody else from using any variation of that idea. Copyright's not like that. It only protects the particular way in which you've expressed an idea. Obviously, the lines get a bit blurred. It's not always easy to discern between the idea and the way that you've expressed it, but I think that's a bit beyond today. And copyright gives the owner of the copyright certain exclusive rights. So the chief among them being the right to reproduce that work and the right to adapt it, to make alterations to it. And there are secondary rights as well, like publishing and communicate it to the public, et cetera. So if somebody else performs one of those exclusive rights without your consent, then you have a legal right to pursue them. You can sue them for infringement. And you can get damages, monetary damages, reasonable royalties, an interdict telling them not to do it again, that kind of thing. So in the context of AI, first I think it's necessary that we clarify which kind of subset of AI we're talking about. AI is a kind of broad umbrella term for anything that enables a machine to do something that would otherwise require human intelligence, right? Just at a very high level. So, but typically we're talking about machine learning, which is a subset of of artificial intelligence. And by machine learning, we mean technology that enables a machine to learn on its own by analyzing a set of training data and constantly improve at its given task, right? That's generally what we mean by machine learning. And the most topical form of machine learning that everybody's talking about at the moment is large language models, or so-called so-called generative AI. So large language models are machine learning models that can comprehend language and generate output, language-based output, right? And they do this by basically they're machines that have been fed enough examples to be able to recognize and interpret human language. So I'm not going to go into the details of how they work, but one thing to bear in mind that's important for later in this discussion is that they work on what we call a probabilistic methodology, right? So they use probabilistic analysis that applies statistical models to a set of training data, and then it's able to make predictions based on those statistical models, right? So it's probabilistic as opposed to deterministic, which characterizes traditional software. So I think this is perhaps a good touch point to consider what the difference is between machine learning software versus traditional software. And the difference in the past, we've had traditional software that could create things. It could create music, could create poetry, literature, etc. But there's a big difference between how that older deterministic software worked versus newer AI software. So both obviously produce content, but traditional creative software was deterministic in the sense that it relied on predetermined rules and templates and algorithms, et cetera, that were programmed into it, and then it would generate content in a kind of structured way, relying on those predefined or predetermined characteristics. So, for instance, a music composition program would use a set of predefined chord progressions and rhythmic elements to produce content. Whereas generative AI takes a set of training data, it learns patterns and styles and structures from its training data, and instead of following fixed rules, it uses what it's learned to generate novel content. Now, and because of that way of operating, it's able to produce more diverse and kind of unpredictable results than traditional creative software. So perhaps we can start touching on copyright infringement in the context of large language models and generative AI. So when does copyright infringement arise in that context? So the first thing is, and it's become quite topical now, is does the training of these models based on vast amounts of content, the copyright in which is owned by third parties, amount to infringement? So these AIs are trained on vast sets of data, typically scraped from the internet. A lot of the time, the producers of these algorithms don't have consent. They don't have a license from whoever owns that content. Just thousands of people owning different content. Sometimes they do have licenses, but a large part of what AI and some of these people do doesn't involve licensed content. They're doing it without consent. So the question is, if they don't have consent, is that infringement? To simply take somebody else's creative works and train your AI on the basis of it? So the answer depends on the particular jurisdiction you're operating in. It depends. Laws differ from country to country. But it's understandable that creators have been upset by this, right? So you have many in the creative industry that are not happy with their works being used commercially, profit being made out of their works without any rewards trickling down to them. And so there's been lawsuits in many parts of the world, largely in the U.S., where many of these or most of these AI companies are based. They obviously sued in their home jurisdictions. Almost none of these cases have really run their course, so we don't have much clarity from the courts. But we do have the laws to work with, and we can make predictions based on those laws. So one there's been a big case brought by the New York Times against OpenAI and the makers of ChatGPT and Microsoft, its owner. They've been sued on the basis that they've used a whole bunch of the New York Times articles and content over the years to train up their AIs. So the question is the training an infringement, but is the output generated by the AIs that is similar to the New York Times content, is that infringement as well? So there's two kind of separate issues there. In the U.S., the legal position is characterized by the particularities of their copyright law, specifically their first use, their fair use defense, right? So that this is a defense, a very broad, flexible defense to copyright infringement that they have in the U.S. called fair use. And it essentially allows you to get away with infringement, to raise this as an absolute defense, if what you're doing is considered fair. Now, fair is not a layman's term there. It's a term of art, and over the years they've developed various factors that have to be considered to decide whether something is fair. Chief among those is the effect on the copyright owner's market. So if you, the defendant, are using somebody else's work, what is the effect on the copyright owner's market? Another factor that's particularly important to AI is what you're doing transformative? Are you taking somebody else's work and creating something new? Of course, we want to encourage innovation and creativity, and then there's a balance to be struck in IP law between stopping people from using your work but also allowing a certain amount of creativity. So that's really what's at issue under the fair use, and that's the defense that the AI companies have relied on largely. They've said that what we're doing by training our AIs and by generating output based on users' prompts is fair use. And who knows which way that's going to go. In South Africa, we don't have a broad defense like that. We follow the British tradition. They don't have a broad defense of fair use either. We have a more limited set of defenses called fair dealing, and there isn't really one that's applicable to this type of scenario. So in South Africa and the UK to an extent, the AI companies don't have the benefit of that defense. So it's actually, if a case like that was brought here, it's more likely to go against them. It's more likely to be found to be copyright infringement, and they would have to pay damages, etc. So what about the outputs, right? So large language models are not like your typical search engine. They don't search for pre-existing text and then just reproduce the text wholesale. They generate new text, right? So the question is that new text potentially copyright infringement if it's based on training data that is copyrighted? So depending on the instructions or prompts that the user gives to the LLM, this might infringe the copyright. The LLM, the large language model, might spit out an output that consists at least in part or substantial part of the copyright material that it was trained on. And that also depends on the prompt, right? The prompt that the user inputs to tell the LLM what to produce. So potentially the LLM, the large language model company, is infringing copyright in that scenario. But also, and more concerning for your users, is the user of the LLM is potentially infringing copyright. So let's say you are a business and you want to create a picture for your marketing material, for instance. You go to ChatGPT, you type in a prompt saying, I'd like a picture of Richard when he was younger for my radio station, and it generates a picture based on other pictures of Richard that have been found over the internet, that the copyright in which is owned by other parties, right? So if you as the user now take that image and you use it, you're potentially infringing, because it's reproducing, it's performing one of the exclusive rights of the copyright owner. You're reproducing that image owned by somebody else. And the fact that you got it from the LLM, from the large language model, is irrelevant, right? You're still reproducing. So what we say as lawyers in copyright space is the reproduction of an infringing reproduction is still an infringement in and of itself, right? So think of the photocopying example. If somebody gives you a photocopy of a book that they made illegally, and you take that photocopy and make a photocopy of it, it's still an infringement, right? It's the same thing here. So there's risk for users, right? You shouldn't be satisfied that what an AI is spitting out is safe to use legally. It might still be infringing. And so some of the AI providers know this, and they provide indemnities in their terms and conditions. They say, we will actually indemnify our users if they're sued for copyright infringement on this basis. Typically, that only applies to their paid products. Obviously, they're not going to give that indemnity to unpaying users. But they're still, even if you have that indemnity, is an American company going to come to your rescue? you still might be stuck in litigation for years. You know, it's not something you want to do. So there's some best practices that we recommend for our clients if they're going to be using AI generated work to avoid infringement, right? So one of them is to run the outputs of the AI through a search engine, and you can even do this with images, right? If you're using AI to produce images for you. You can run those images through a so-called reverse image search, like Google has one. There's a couple of others, and it'll tell you, and then you'll be able to see whether there are any similar results on the web, right? And that'll give you an idea of whether anybody else has any copyrights to over that material. Another one is to save the prompts you use. So if you're going to be using, for instance, an image generator, you save the prompts that you use because that might be relevant down the line if you're ever sued and you need to explain how you came up with this and why it's not infringing. Avoid referencing known pre-existing works that are subject to copyright in your prompts. So when you're telling an AI to do something, don't say, make me a book that's similar in style to, you know, some famous author. If you're referencing somebody else, the AI is likely to generate work based on their work. So that takes you closer to infringement. And obviously, don't upload pre-existing work. So many of these AIs allow you to upload work, pre-existing work, to it and to use that in your prompts. So try and avoid uploading pre-existing third-party works that attract copyright that's owned by somebody else. So then that brings us to who owns the output of these things, right? So you've used an AI to generate image for your marketing material. Now, who owns that image? Do you own the copyright in that image? And that becomes relevant because you might want to stop somebody else from using the image used. It might become an important part of your branding, and you might want to enforce those rights against somebody else. And this, again, varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Generally, the copyright laws hold that the author of a work needs to be a human. Well, this is the way they've interpreted. In the U.S., the Copyright Office has explicitly come out and said the AI-generated work will not qualify for copyright because it's not produced by a human. In other jurisdictions like the EU and the U.K., there's a bit more scope to argue that AI-generated work can qualify for copyright, even though it's produced by a machine. So this largely would come down to a matter of degree, like how much creative input has there been from a human. If it's a scenario where, an everyday scenario where somebody's just typed in a fairly standard prompt into an AI, it spits out an image or some text, and you use that, then it's unlikely to qualify for copyright because there's been very little creative input by the human. But if you're using AI more as a paintbrush or as a tool, and there's a lot of creative input from you, the human, then that potentially goes the other way. Complicating things in South Africa and in the UK, we have our copyright legislation specifically refers to so-called computer-generated work. So it allows copyright to be claimed in works that are computer-generated. But these laws were written before the AI revolution, and they didn't really anticipate AI work. But there's currently no guidance from the courts. But it's possible that this could be relied on as a basis for claiming ownership of copyright in AI-generated work. So if, let's assume that there is copyright does arise in an AI creative work. There's been enough creative input from a human, for instance. Who owns it? Is it the AI company? Is it OpenAI, or is it the user? Right. This can come down to a number of things, but the terms and conditions of the AI that you're using would be very relevant. Mm-hmm. OpenAI, for instance, says that their terms and conditions say that you, the user, will own the output. So they actually transfer any copyright that might arise in the output to you. Other AIs differ. The terms and conditions are, you know, varied. So as between those two parties, you would have to look to the terms and conditions. But there's also a question of what the underlying copyright law says, right? Typically, the first author of a work is considered the first owner of the copyright. And if it comes down to that, who's considered the author? Is it the user, or is it the AI company, right? So you get into that's also that we have very little guidance from the courts. And again, I think that might come down to a matter of degree. How much input has there been from the user? Again, a standard you know, two-line prompt from a user is unlikely to result in them being considered the author. But if it goes further than that, then potentially yes. So Richard, I think that's me. Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got questions running through my head, but before we get to those, let me address the couple that have come in on our WhatsApp. Judy says, so if I ask AI to draw me an image, it might be stealing someone else's work. Is it therefore not a safe way to ask for images for social media posts?
Look, the AI companies are savvy to this, and they've built in ways to try and root out this type of thing. But it's they're not perfect, right? So I think if you're going to be doing that, there are ways to minimize your risk, and I addressed them earlier. Yeah. One of them was running them through a search engine, etc. Maybe people do it, and it's perfectly fine. I think just follow the kind of guidelines that I'd given earlier, and you'll probably be fine.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you've got to check it out,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
All right. Another question here is, so I have a question. I wrote a lot in my last job. I work for myself, so all that I produce is my intellectual property, and I license it to the clients for their use. If an AI program produces something that sounds similar to mine because its bots have been through my website or my client's website, what are my rights? Surely the AI is only returning an approximation of other people's works, including mine.
Yeah, so I mean, that depends on the output in particular. I mean, it's going to have to be assessed on a case-by-case basis, right? It's not. It's difficult to advise on these things in the abstract, but. If they've taken your writing and it's kind of just at a very high level of abstraction, it's similar to it, but it's not actually reproducing the actual text that you used, then it's potentially not copyright infringement. If it's gone further and it's more similar than that, and it's actually used the text that you've used or very very similar text, then it potentially is copyright infringement. It's all a matter of degree, and you know, these are complicated assessments that have to be done by copyright lawyers.
Of which you are one.
Yeah, sure. But it's difficult to advise without the facts. But I mean, if you have to assess the similarity as a starting point, right?
Okay, I've got a couple of questions. So, if your content is your own original thought. So let's say there is somebody who is good at sort of concept ideas, but you want to pull this together into some sort of structure that makes sense to another person. Some people are extremely creative and they're out there and you can never really follow them. And sometimes even when they write things down, it's like, you know, a mind map.
Mm.
If you're essentially pulling a mind map into a authored document using the AI language, what do you call it? Large language model.
Okay. Yeah.
That is not infringement, surely, because it's my original thought. All I'm doing is correcting language.
Yeah. So I mean, it depends what you've used, right? Mm. If you've uploaded somebody else's work into the AI and said, build me a mind map based on this. And then you take those ideas and you use them. It would be a question of how much of the pre-existing work you've used, and whether the term we use is substantial part. So have you used a substantial part of the pre-existing work owned by somebody else? Right?
Yeah. But if I'm the one writing down point A, point B, point C, point D, point E, I'm writing them, but maybe I'm Greek and I've got a sort of broken English and I want to clean that up so somebody who reads English well can understand it better.
Yeah.
It'll interpret those things and put them into decent grammar.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I think in that scenario, if you've done the underlying groundwork, so you've written it in Greek and you want it to be translated into English or you want the grammar to be improved, the underlying substance of that work was produced by you, a human being. You would have you would own the copyright in that.
Okay.
And I think anything that the AI does potentially would be seen as an adaptation of your work, and you would potentially own the copyright in that adaptation too, depending on your involvement.
All right.
Yeah.
So now, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that people use these things like I don't know what they all are, chat
ChatGPT,
OpenAI.
Yeah.
And once you process something through there, which is always a thing that concerns me, so I go in there, I've got my broken Greek text, and I want it improved. Does the AI machine suck that in and make it part of the greater database? Or
there's been instances where that's happened. I think it was employees with Samsung famously inputted some code of theirs or some other trade secret or proprietary information, and then it was spat out in somebody else's output down the line, and their trade secrets were exposed that way. So you need to be careful about that thing. Mm. Certainly the advice we give to our clients is don't put anything of commercial value, any trade secrets, etc., into a public AI, right? Mm. Rather use it on your own. You can download the AIs and use it and kind of wall it off on your own system.
Okay, so it can be an independent operating system.
Yeah.
All right. It's a very, very interesting topic, and one that we're really only scratching the surface of, because AI is going to – it's got to do with 3D printing. It's going to – all of that stuff is going to be affected by – AI.
Hmm.
So essentially you could go along and say, build me a something, and now who owns that something, and you know, do I have the qualifications, the structural qualifications, all those kind of things. Yeah. I mean, is this the future of the law?
Well, hopefully not. I mean, hopefully not before I retire. it's a minefield.
Okay,
and you have this weird situation which has never really arisen in history, where you might have works out there that look amazing, that seem like they've taken a lot of intellectual input and thought to produce, but you have a bizarre scenario where nobody owns the copyright in those things, even though those things were to have been produced by a human on their own, it would have attracted copyright. Mm. So you have this bizarre situation where there might be these amazing things out there, but nobody would own the rights to it.
Mm. You know? Okay. It is, at this stage of the game, very much a gray area, and I would imagine your services would be in demand, someone who specializes like you in it. Now you are a partner at Spur & Fisher. Just as an end-off, and I'm not asking you to disclose any confidentiality, something interesting that you've dealt with, where AI in particular was the crux of the matter. Just an example, an example, without betraying any confidences.
Yeah, look, I mean, I do a large publisher, for instance, was rather than paying people to create new images and things that, or licensing images, they were wanting to use AI to produce them, and I had to advise them on what the risks were if they started publishing images and other material used by AI. Will they, as the publisher, be liable for infringement potentially? Would they be able to enforce their rights if a rival publisher started using their material that's produced by AI? It all gets very, very tricky when you're dealing with AI generated content. It's not as simple as it would have been if say a journalist or an artist had produced it. You know,
I think when it comes to you write a book, I write a book. You one side of the world, I'm another side of the world. There is the possibility that coincidence could play a part, that we come to similar conclusions, and that could be argued.
That wouldn't be copyright infringement. Right?
Correct.
Yeah.
But we could be using similar language or similar concepts or whatever the case may be. There may be similarities that are quite striking. We're totally isolated from each other.
Mm.
You can't get away with that with AI now, because it's very difficult to prove that I didn't know about your stuff or whatever the case may be. Yeah. So I don't envy you. I really don't envy you.
Yeah, I bill by the hour, so it's fine.
And this one's going to rog up a lot of hours. Listen, is there anything else that we've left out? Hayden, I know that you spoke about, if I generate a lesson summary of my own lesson, I have written, say, 10,000 words, and then the original output is mine, so the AI product is as well. Yes, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeremy, thank you so much. I mean, it was wonderful meeting you.
Likewise.
And I think that you must have very, very fascinating days.
Yeah.
And who said the law was boring? No, it's not. I think that you're at the cutting edge of all of this, and it's wonderful to chat to you about this. I don't think it's the last time we're going to chat. I think we've only just scratched the surface.
Yeah. But
thank you for coming in, and ordinarily, John would have been you asking intelligent questions, but unfortunately,
your questions were plenty intelligent.
but you outlined it so beautiful, and you came so well prepared. Thank you very, very much. And I do hope that your young ones get to hear the recording of Dad on the radio, because, folks, believe it or not, take a bow. It was the first time that he's been on radio, and I think he did an absolutely amazing job. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jeremy. For having me, Richard. Appreciate it.
The IP Zone was brought to you by Spoor & Fisher, because every pioneer needs a partner. Visit spoor.com.
You are a leader, a visionary. You embrace technology to develop cutting-edge solutions. You are original and innovative. You imagine. Trailblazing is often a lonely path, but we see the extraordinary in what you do. When it comes to understanding and protecting your intellectual property, your journey is our journey. Visit our website at spoor.com and discover how we can protect what is uniquely yours. Spoor & Fisher. Create it. Own it.